are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Not to steer this podcast in a completely wrong direction.
Which you're very good at doing, by the way.
So it just makes me depressed that we have to even talk about him today.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's a little bit of my soul is gone, and I really think that there's a corner of my house that I just need to go curl in a ball or something. I'll be back in a little bit, guys.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, Tommy Joseph is my favorite guy that looks like he's 45, but is actually not.
I thought I was your favorite guy that looks 45, but isn't.
Well, I shouldn't have said that out loud then, I guess. We have competition, but
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good. A little stressed with work happenings, but excited to get to this baseball, and it's good to be back on the podcast. It feels like it's been a long time, even though it really hasn't, but we need to get Mike's schedule on board so we can do that prospect pod again, but yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you back. And, you know, I figured we didn't have any Cardinals homerism last week, so we needed to bring in a little bit more to kind of see who the biggest Cardinal homer was. And so we have brought on Philip Evans of the Fantasy Front Office Podcast. Philip, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm happy to be on filling in.
Well, I'm glad you were able to make it. We were supposed to have your co-host over there, Keith, but he was unable to make it because of a family thing that popped up, so we're glad you were able to come in and fill in for him. Why don't you tell people where you can be reached on social media, and then tell us a little bit about yourself and what you guys do over at your podcast.
All right. So my name is Philip Evans, and I am on at the Baseball Jedi on Twitter. That's really the only spot I'm at, not on Facebook or anything like that. The at Fan Front Office is the podcast, and we just started it this year. We're kind of new to the game and trying to figure out exactly what our niche is and what we're going to do, but we're just trying to share some knowledge and spread baseball love to everybody out there. So that's pretty much what we're doing now.
Well, definitely go check it out. We always love having some kind of newer people within the industry come on, because give some, you know, fresh faces, fresh voices to the chaos that is fantasy sports. So we're glad you're able to come on and share some of your Jedi knowledge.
There we go.
let's jump into some.
Is that like a Star Trek thing?
I'm just exactly.
No, I know it's not.
let's jump into some recent news and talk about your guys' Cardinals, who traded away Matt Adams to Atlanta. And he becomes the first baseman filling in for Freddie Freeman while he is out on the DL for the next, I don't know, 10 to 12 weeks. Matt, what are your thoughts on Matt Adams being moved to Atlanta?
Good for him. Matt Adams, obviously, in St. Louis, the left field experiment went about as bad as it possibly could have gone. And to no fault of his, by the way, he wasn't the one forcing the manager to put him in left field. So he went out there, did what he was told. And that experiment ended soon, and with Matt Carpenter's all of a sudden inability to move around the diamond, Adams was blocked at playing time by the best bat on the lineup, so he had nowhere to go. I'm glad he gets a shot in Atlanta. I think it's going to be short-lived out there, though, too. It was a weird trade for the Braves, like from a real baseball sense, because the Braves, you would think, would be in the position to acquire these lottery ticket type of guys, and Juan Yepez, who they sent back the other way, kind of is that. For St. Louis, he's a first baseman, third baseman prospect that supposedly has big power. He hasn't tapped into it yet. So we'll see how that goes. But, I like Adams, and I think he's going to be serviceable in deep and only formats. He's obviously not going to make up for Freeman. But I think his stay in Atlanta will be short, though. I do think he gets moved again when Freeman returns because, again, he's going to be stuck behind one of the best offensive players in the league, and he can't play anywhere else. So I guess he's a short-term band-aid, if that. He can hit. I think he's been the power. And the lefty, the numbers against lefties have kind of he's kind of narrowed the gap a little bit. And you got to remember, this guy has hit home runs off Madison Bumgarner and Clayton Kershaw before in the playoffs in pretty big moments. So like
everybody's hit one off of Kershaw in the playoffs.
He's everyone on the Cardinals, maybe. Yeah. No, I mean, the thing with Adams is I'm happy he gets an opportunity, but I think he's going to be moving on again. And he's in a weird spot because if he goes to an American League team, I'm not quite sure the bat's good enough to be a DH because he kind of has the rap as being a big power guy when I don't really think he has that. I think he's a 20-homer bat, but I think he can hit 260, 270. So I don't know how valuable that is long-term, but I think staying in Atlanta to make it short will be short, and I think he'll be on the move soon.
Philip, what's your thoughts on Matt Adams heading to Atlanta?
Is there anything else to say after what Matt just talked about? I'm just kidding. So Matt Adams is a guy that he kind of reminds me of James Loney. And I know you guys talked about that last week, that James Loney is like Matt Adams light. And you guys kind of had a little foresight into that trade. So that was pretty cool.
Good call, Eli.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I disagree with Matt. I just don't think that Matt Adams is anything that anybody's going to really want in pretty much any league unless he's already owned in like a super deep, you know, NL only or something like that. At this point, I think I would probably stay away from him. And I don't know. He just isn't a guy that I would target at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree a little bit with you guys in terms of, I mean, you know, his long-term future obviously is not going to be in Atlanta, and I think this is a kind of a showcase for him. It gives him the opportunity to pretty much play every day in Atlanta and gain back some value so they can try to trade him to someone else, like Matt said, when Freddie Freeman returns. But who knows when Freeman returns, and who knows what his wrist is like when he gets back. I mean, we've seen wrist injuries sap power numbers and really trouble guys and linger. I mean, good examples of that, like, you know, Jason Kipnis has had arm issues that have lingered. You know, there've been other guy, you know, Jason Hayward had wrist issues that that lingered. I mean, this isn't necessarily that Freeman will be back in 10 to 12 weeks and be Freddie Freeman of the first half. So, and I think that the fact that he's left-handed in that short porch in SunTrust Field, I think this could be a really cheap option 15-team mixed leagues to pick up in roster, you know, especially because most people are probably struggling with depth on their roster. Matt Adams is going to get a chance to play virtually every day for the foreseeable future, and he's going to hit in the middle of a Braves lineup that actually isn't that bad. I mean, it's not great.
I think without Freeman, it's pretty bad.
Well, and the other thing is the first.
Adrian Cerarte has been good. Brandon Phillips is, you know, livable. Nick Markakis gets on base. I mean, he could drive in a number of runs in that lineup. Now, the lineup behind him, Dansby Swanson, Tyler Flowers,
Rio Ruiz at third base. Yeah, it's not.
Well, the other thing is what I was talking about earlier is the first base landscape is in most leagues going to be pretty full. I mean, guys came out of nowhere like Yonder Alonso, Ryan Zimmerman. I mean, a lot of guys have first basemen that they weren't expecting to do anything. And I mean, I just remember a couple of years ago, you were talking about it a second ago, Matt, that they were talking about Matt Adams having power. On ESPN, they projected him to have like 38 home runs one year. I just remember something odd like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, they don't project people to do 30 home runs ever, but they're giving him 38. And I just laughed at it. And I think he hit like 14 that year or something crazy like that. So I don't know. I just, like I said, it's just not something where I've ever really bought in on Matt Adams. I mean, he's a 270 career hitter with 17 home runs as his max.
All right, let's do a would you rather with Matt Adams, because I'm gonna try to prove my point here a little bit. Now, these are guys all that are available in my 14-team three-sport league. So the baseball portion of this league is 14 teams. It's standard 5x5 roto. So would you rather have for the next 12 weeks Matt Adams or Ryan Healy?
Probably Ryan Healy.
Yeah, I would do the same.
Yeah, I'm going to go Healy there as well. Matt Adams or Joe Mauer?
You said it's not OBP?
It is not OBP.
I know Maurer has changed his launch angle this year, but I think I might go Adams.
I mean, isn't Joe
Maurer... I mean, they're kind of the same player.
That's what I was just going to say. Isn't Joe Maurer what you want Matt Adams to be?
Yeah, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm taking Maurer.
Really?
Maurer, I think.
Yep. I think it's Adams, and I don't think it's particularly close. I think
How much have you watched Matt Adams though? Yeah, as a Cardinals fan, like I don't know.
I think you guys are just hating a little bit because he never panned out the way you.
I like the guy. I mean, he had unreasonable expectations placed on him. He was who he is. I mean, I don't.
He already has two home runs in what? Let's see, 52 at bats. Joe Maurer has the same amount of home runs in 130 at bats.
Yeah, but Joe Maurer's been a 300 hitter for over a decade. I mean, that's I don't know. I just if you're asking me what do I want for the next 12 weeks, I go with Joe Maurer just because I know what he's done in the past. I know what Matt Adams has done in the past, and I just expect them to kind of do something similar.
Okay, I
think they're going to be. You know what? I'm going to flip flop again. I think they're going to be very similar. I think they're going to be very similar, but I do think Adams has a little bit more power potential. So I will go that route.
All right, Matt Adams or Lucas Duda?
Is Duda hurt right now?
No, but he will be soon.
Yeah, he will be soon.
Yeah, I mean.
but also there's a good chance Adams is as well. I mean, to be honest, I will go Duda because he gets on base more.
Duda because of the power upside. Mm. I mean, we've seen it.
Matt Adams or Chris Carter? My boy, Chris Carter.
See,
I think that's the cutoff because I don't think he gets enough playing time.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at with this. I think I'm going. Well, he's got 95 plate appearances, and he's been god awful. So I'm going to go with Matt Adams. I think just because I think the first guy to get squeezed out of playing time with the Yankees is going to be Carter.
Okay, and right. So I mean, you know, I do this to say that you know this is a 14-team league. So if you're playing in anything this deep or deeper, Matt Adams may be the best thing on the waiver wire.
Yeah, there's a good chance of that. Yeah.
So, let's go ahead and move on to the next player we're going to talk about. That is JD Martinez, who has come off the disabled list just scorching hot. Including his two plate appearances today, he's hitting 379, 550, 1,000 slug with six home runs in 40 plate appearances. So
I do this joke on the podcast. I say, is that good?
Yeah. So Philip, how good is it? is JD Martinez like a top five, top 10 outfielder?
God, the thing is he's always been injured. Okay. So he gets injured and then Houston got rid of him. Then he goes to Detroit and he just kills the ball out of nowhere. And since then, like this year, I was looking at some StatCast data earlier. I'm going to get kind of nerdy on it. Per plate appearance, he does 18.4% barrels. The elite level is 10%. He's, you know, coming close to double that right now. 60% of the balls that he hits in play are 95% or 95 miles per hour or faster. I think those numbers are pretty solid. So he's a guy that I would definitely target. And yes, he was a guy that, I mean, top five, maybe at this point, he has the upside for it.
Matt, what are your thoughts on JD Martinez, top five?
I'm not going to quite go that high, but it's pretty close. It's splitting hairs for me. I mean, when you heard the news, he was coming back a little early. I think as a fantasy owner, you're like, oh, man, I had him stashed for this long. Now he's coming back early because normally I'm pessimistic when it comes to injuries like that. When a guy comes back early, I'm automatically thinking he's going to go down right away. But I think what he's been doing now, I mean, while you can't take anything out of it because it's such a small sample, he's been outstanding. He's picking up the slack for Victor Martinez in that lineup, giving Cabrera another asset because of the roster construction there is still kind of wonky, I guess is a nice word for it. But, I mean, the big thing that jumps out at me is a 28% walk rate while cutting the strikeout rate to 18% going into tonight. And if you're not familiar with Martinez, he's an upper 20% guy. That's kind of where he's been labeled since he made that massive mechanical changes coming from Houston to Detroit. And he's kind of the poster boy for swing changes now, because you see how much it worked for him. He was almost out of baseball, to put it frankly, with Houston. I think they DFA'd him twice, two separate times, and he ends up in Detroit. And he's been a revelation, and now he's kind of the poster boy, like I said, for if a guy changes his swing, you're like, well, okay, it worked for this guy, so got to give him a shot here. And he's massively underrated, I think, even going into this year, J.D. Martinez was. I mean, obviously the injury happened late in the spring, and fantasy owners are sure glad he's back, because he's more than making up for lost time. I mean, that 631 WOBA is going to keep up for the year, so he'll win you some leagues, right?
I mean,
I was just looking at a difference that his OPS plus right now is 344.
Yeah, that's legit.
I mean, the 357 BABIP might come down a little bit. But I mean, wow, I can.
Well, here's a question for you. What was his BABIP in 2016?
That's what I'm looking at. I was just about to say that. He had a 378 BABIP.
And the year before that was 339. The year before that was 389. So he's a high BABIP.
It's because of those barrels. When I was just looking it up earlier today, they were saying barrel balls have a 500 batting average on average, at minimum, 500 average batting average, and a 1500 slugging percentage. That's the minimum for a barreled ball.
Guess what his hard hit percentage is?
I'm going to guess something crazy like 55%.
60% of it's 95 or faster, so I'm going above 60. Let's go with 80.
It's exactly 60%, and his soft contact percentage is 10%, which is insane. So I mean,
soft contact percentage was 10% is actually kind of right around normal for him.
I mean, this is all legit. I think he's I'm not going to say he's top five, because looking at like the player rater, I mean, obviously you're going to take Trout, Harper, Mookie Betts, and probably Charlie Blackmon. But rest of the season, would you rather have JD Martinez or Nelson Cruz?
JD Martinez.
Yeah.
JD Martinez or Eric Thames?
J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, well, Thames has those issues going on right now with his calves or whatever it is.
I do want to specify, am I playing three outfielders or five? Because I'm playing five, it's Martinez all day. If I'm playing Thames, well, I guess they're both outfielders, so...
Yeah, I'm going to say five.
Give me Martinez.
J.D. Martinez or Chris Bryant?
Chris Bryant.
Chris Bryant, yeah.
J.D. Martinez,
Chris Bryant's first rounder.
Or Miguel Sano.
Miguel Sano, it's closer than people would think it is, I think, with how Sano's come out of the gate. But it's Sano, but close, because Sano's got the little upside. I think Martinez's upside is what he's, which is damn good. So
I think the average is safer, so I'm going Martinez.
I'm going Martinez as well. I retract
my statement. I was just going to say, I mean, as much as I love Miguel Sano, love Miguel Sano, J.D. Martinez came into the season doing exactly what he's doing right now. Miguel Sano is doing it for a month and a half so far. I need to have him prove it for a little longer before I put him up there.
All right, let's move on to kind of a lower tier guy that has been interesting so far this year.
It's always been interesting. His whole career.
he has been. Trevor Bauer is a guy that I always thought would figure things out. And he's getting the strikeouts, like he always does, but he's struggling. Matt, are you seeing anything in Trevor Bauer worth holding on to?
With all the injuries that you probably have for your pitching staff, I don't know if you really have a choice. You might have to with what's on the waiver wire in your respective league. I mean, I don't know what's out there, but I do think the home runs he's giving up are obviously fluky right now, 22.7%, which is crazy. Just over two home runs per nine innings, which is an insane number. The strikeouts are way up from last season considerably. The walks are actually slightly lower. He's getting BABIPed, which obviously doesn't count against his home runs, and he's giving up a lot of home runs, which not even looking at the number tells me he's giving up too much hard contact, and his command must not be where it needs to be even for him. He's not a command guy by any means. And as long as you don't have to deal with him in the clubhouse of a fantasy team, which obviously you don't, and he seems like a guy worth rostering, but he seems like a complete douchebag in real life. So I normally like guys like this that are he thinks outside the box. But he's the type of guy that thinks outside the box and lets you know that he's thinking outside the box, if that makes any sense. Like, he thinks he's smarter than everyone. And he might be, but he just comes off in a way that you don't like him. So I'm out on Bauer, and just count down to another drone injury, I guess.
Philip, are you in or out on Bauer?
I was going to say I was out until I saw him jump the strikeout rate up this year and keep the walk rate around the same. The one thing that bothers me is he's still at three walks per nine. That's something where he definitely needs to get that under control, because with it seems like they're hitting everything at this point. He's got almost 10 hits per nine. So never mind. If he's walking everyone and they're hitting him every time, it just seems like he's nibbling, and that's how he's getting the strikeouts. So I think I'm going to pass on that.
It seems like he's, just by looking at the overall numbers without watching him pitch very much, it looks like he's just going off the numbers. Looks like he's leaving too many pitches over the middle of the plate.
Well, I think part of the issue is it seems like more this year than in years past, hitters are spitting on his breaking stuff. People are not swinging outside the zone on him as much as they have in the past. And I think that's hurting him. It may be a control issue where he's not, where his pitches outside the zone aren't particularly close, and they're able to lay off of it and kind of wait on the stuff inside the zone. But he's never been a guy with great command. So, I mean, he's going to struggle. He's interesting to me because his strand rate is much lower than it has been in the past. Matt, you mentioned the high BABIP. And the home run to fly ball rate is going to come down. I mean, he's given up two home runs per nine. That's not going to continue to happen. And I think when it does, you're going to have a much more interesting pitcher. Now, how interesting? I think he's always going to have, you know, a 4 ERA. But with the amount of strikeouts he gets, if he continues this, you know, 10-plus strikeout per nine rate that he's been going with, I think we could have a guy that's really interesting in a DFS context, and then as a streamer, even in shallow formats. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about the next guy, and that is Wellington Castillo. Since coming off the DL himself, he's been red hot. So Philip, what are your thoughts on Wellington Castillo?
So when I was looking up some Statcast numbers for him, his exit velocity is a little bit above average, 89.7%. He does have a pretty high percentage of balls that he hits that are 95 miles an hour or higher at 43%. And then his barrel rate is actually about 50% higher than average at 7.3%. So I think he's somebody that I would probably target, because last year when he was, what was he, with Arizona last year? Mm-hmm. So he did pretty well there. And I mean, obviously Baltimore is a hitter's park. So he's come out of left field right after that injury and just went on a tear. He at the beginning of the season had all batting average with no counting numbers at all. No runs, no RBIs, home runs, nothing. And then he just came out of nowhere and started hitting the ball rather hard. So I think he would be somebody I would definitely keep an eye on.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Castillo?
He's a guy that we all kind of liked a lot going into the season as a catcher that's still going to hit, because he came from Arizona to Baltimore. It's not that great of a downgrade from hitter's park. I mean, it is, but for right-handed power in Baltimore, it's still a pretty good place to be. He's finally tapping into that power. I don't know if the injury he suffered might have lasted a little bit longer than he actually went on the DL for, if you know what I mean. Maybe he was hurt for a lot longer and unable to because it was a shoulder injury, so I mean that could be a shoulder tendonitis, so it could be the reason why the power wasn't there. I'm always a little bit leery when guys go on a tear immediately when they come off the DL. You don't know if they did cortisone injections or anything like that, which I don't know how they're even legal. For steroids are illegal, but cortisone shots are legal, which is weird to me, because they essentially, from my lack of medical knowledge, aren't they short term steroids basically, so you'd heal faster?
Not really, no.
No, okay, well then I'm wrong. But the thing with Castillo, though, I'm always a little bit leery when guys come off the DL because he's fresh, hasn't been doing the day-to-day grind. Obviously, he's not going to keep this up, but I'm wondering how much he's going to drop off. His previous numbers say that they won't very much. But the thing that is with the trade-off with Castillo is you wonder how much him playing every day is hurting guys like Gausman and all the pitchers there, because he's a known butcher behind the plate. So I guess with Castillo, though, with the depth of catching, he's definitely, I would definitely put him in the top 10 for catchers probably the rest of the season out. I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah, for sure in the top 10, but just keep in mind that if you're in an on-base percentage league, he does not take walks. He's, you know, batting average league, he's right there where it's about to start hurting you too. So just keep that kind of stuff in mind, because he's not going to contribute that much across the board, but he'll give you some of the counting numbers you're looking for, you know, maybe 15 home runs or so.
Yeah, and I mean, considering he missed, you know, let's see, I mean, how many weeks did he miss? Over 2 weeks with this injury on the DL. And he is, you know, and that's only, still 7 weeks into the season. He's fifth on the player radar, according to ESPN, at the catcher position. So, I mean, I think he's probably a top 5 to 10 guy rest of the way. But to what Matt was saying, even though he was a little bit wrong on the cortisone shot being kind of being a steroid necessarily, what it will do if he was, and I don't know if he got one, so I'm just speculating.
Yeah, I don't either.
So,
yeah,
I don't know. But if he did, those things tend to wear off. It doesn't tend to last the rest of the season, so it would be something that I would be careful of, and maybe the time right now is you should sell, and so if you can get, you know, maybe like JT Realmuto in another piece, you know, I would consider doing that in like a two catcher league, but more than likely people aren't in one catcher leagues aren't willing to kind of pay, you know, really big prices for catchers. So in one catcher leagues, I just ride out the streak as long as it's going to go. Because if he stays healthy, then, I mean, he's definitely a threat for 25 plus home runs rest of the way.
Real quick, who would you rather? I know this is another thing, but for the rest of the season, Wellington Castillo or Alex Avila? And Avila has been really, really good this year.
Avila's,
you know,
third.
I was Avila's hurt now?
No, I said he's third. Oh, he's third on the player radar.
Oh, okay. I was looking at him on the Statcast data earlier, and that was a guy I did not expect to be up there on the barrel leaderboards, on the hard contacts, so the 95 or more leaderboard, and his exit velocity was up there. I think I would probably rather take him, even though it looks like it's semi-unsustainable. But, I mean, when you're hitting the ball that hard, it's, as I said earlier, I mean, 95 miles an hour of harder is like 500 batting average. So
I'm going to go Castillo just because I feel safer about the playing time. No, I mean,
see, I raised the defensive questions there, so I hear what you're saying.
But they're going to play, they'll play Castillo at DH. They're not, you know, when the Tigers have all their pieces back, which they will once Victor Martinez is back from paternity leave, Avila no longer has a place to play every day because they like James McCann. Wrong. So I think his upside is capped by that. Plus, Camden's a better place to hit.
You don't think that their catching prospect in Baltimore is going to come up? You don't think he's going to come up at some point this year?
No, because I think Buck Showalter will never play a rookie catcher when he's down the stretch.
And if he does, he's going to take away time from Caleb Joseph, not from Wellington Castillo.
Yeah,
agree with that. And Cisco's not a defensive stud by any means either. So if he was, I could see it, but he's not really good defensively either. So he's not going to come up for that.
Not that Baltimore cares about defense at all.
No, clearly not. Slow pitch softball team with all the parts they got out there.
Let's talk a little bit about you, Julio Urias, who was actually optioned on Sunday to Oklahoma City because he was pretty much god awful in his last few starts. So, Matt, are you holding on to Julio Urias, or are you going to just drop him outright in most formats?
I'm dropping him outright in most formats, and I am a little bit worried that there's something going on here. I know the Dodgers are manipulating the disabled list and the options like no other, which is their right to do. But I think there's a little bit more to it with your eyes here, because he's been terrible over the last two outings, like you said, 12 earned runs in just over six innings. And the most alarming thing with that is four walks and one strikeout. Three passes, like he's been walking so many more guys in AAA, even this year too, than he's been accustomed to. And my biggest concern, which I've stated this, I've been along beating this drum about Urias, is the Dodgers are babying him so much that if he was to lose significant time with an injury, you're losing the advantage of him being so young, because then he's going to come back and he's going to be 22 years old and he would have never thrown 160 innings in a season. So then you're building up from the ground up again, but he's so much older, and then he's also 3 years from free agency. So by the time he gets up to that 200 inning mark, not that the Dodgers are going to worry about affording him, but with the way they've handled him, they are going to his free agent walk year might be his first year he goes over 200 innings. And I know that's a long time away, but I just don't like babying arms like this. And I do think if they send him down, I mean, they do have tons of options. I'm a little bit worried because of the strikeouts and the walks. Command is often a very strong sign of something on the injury front, and his command has totally disappeared and gone completely in the opposite direction, because that was his calling card, was his really good command, and it's not there right now. So I am abandoning ship in all redraft formats for this year.
Philip, what are your thoughts on Urias?
His K rate is less than half of what it was last year. As you know, Matt was talking about earlier, his walk rate is right now 5.4 per nine. And his strikeout to walk is 0.79. So, he's a guy that it makes me very sad to even say this. And I don't know what I was thinking at the point when I did it, but on our podcast, Keith and I had a board bet that Urias would finish the season higher than Jason Vargas, and this was like a week and a half ago. And my brain wasn't even thinking the stats in the bank already for Vargas. So like, he was a top five pitcher at that moment. So I already lost the bet is the way that I look at this. So it just makes me depressed that we have to even talk about him today. It's a little bit of my soul is gone, and I really think that there's a corner of my house that I just need to go curl in a ball or something. I'll be back in a little bit, guys.
All right. Well, while you're gone, I'll say that I think he's droppable in just about all formats. I mean, NL only, if you have room to stash him, I guess you stash him. And obviously in keeper and dynasty formats, you hold on tight. But, I mean, I
Sell.
Well, I don't think you can sell right now, though. Because if you're selling, you're going to sell extremely low. So, I mean, you know, why would you... I mean, unless someone's going to give you 80% value on what you paid for him, I don't understand how you can even sell in keeper and dynasty right now.
I mean, if someone has, let's say, Urias and, you know, you want to go get, let's say, Alex Reyes or something like that. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Cardinals fan. I'm saying that because he has Tommy John surgery right now. They were both considered fairly the same prospect. You know, one was a little bit younger. I would make that trade on both sides depending on the situation. So I think that would be something maybe in a keeper or dynasty that you're buying someone that's maybe already injured and you're giving them someone that could potentially help them this year, but also you just want to get rid of.
I actually don't mind that trade offer.
I would take Reyes and run.
Yeah, I mean, I would too, but I think that's something you might be able to pull off. You may have to throw in like a sweetener.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's actually not a bad plan, especially if the person is competing. You know, I mean, I just think this spells the end of Urias' value in fantasy for this season.
Yep.
You know, as much as the Dodgers rotation is made of glass, and it is because it's being manned by Rich Hill, Kenta Maeda, Alex Wood, Brandon McCarthy, and Hinjin. God, I can't even pronounce his goddamn name right now. Ryu.
Scott Kazmir,
who hasn't even pitched yet this season.
Does he even have an arm anymore?
I don't know, but he's getting paid like $33 million over 3 years.
Well, they just demoted Anibal Sanchez today, and I saw that he's making like $16 million this year. So
good for him.
Yay for him.
Right.
So a trivia question this year. This factors in not just salary, but like bonuses and stuff like that. Who is the highest paid position player in all of baseball?
I know the answer, so I won't ruin it.
And I just saw him bat. He just hit in this. He's walking back to the dugout right now because he just made an out.
Oh, I'm watching it too then. Jason Hayward.
Yes, sir. I find that unreal to me since we're talking about highest paid players. But
yeah, I mean.
Well, I'm just glad that the Cubs bought in.
And the Cardinals. To be fair, I would still take him on the Cardinals because they still needed a center fielder. But now they have Fowler. But last year, I still would have taken him. That's for sure.
See, the thing is that, I don't know, Hayward, sorry to get on a tangent, I do this sometimes, but Hayward's just a guy that's always been so inconsistent as far as what he does other than defense. 1 year he'll bat 240, and then the next year he'll bat 290. 1 year he'll hit 20 home runs, the next year he'll hit 17. Or 29 home runs, the next year it's 17. And then 1 year he 20 stolen bases, the next year it's 3. And they're never the same year, so you never know what kind of player you're getting
this year, man.
Yeah, and he's still batting 240.
But the thing is, he didn't rebuild his swing.
No, he didn't. It was just a complete joke. He moved his hands.
Yeah, he moved the placement of his hands. Because if you watch his
swing, they go right back up when he's swinging. It's the same. They just start lower, but they go, if not, they might even go higher.
Yeah, it's actually a worse positioning than it was last year. He's just getting away with it a little bit more, so... Jason Hayward, at least he's good defensively, so they're not losing all the value that they put on him, but they're losing a lot of it.
And as a base runner, if he ever gets on base.
Not to steer this podcast in a completely wrong direction, but...
Which you're very good at doing, by the way.
I am doing it right now, and I apologize, but we have another Cardinal fan on board. I know we watch a lot of Cubs games because we play each other a lot.
Right.
And Justin, you watch a lot of baseball, probably more than anyone I know. I'm going to ask you both this question, and I mean this 100% honestly. How negatively are the growth of every offensive player on the Cubs besides Bryant and Rizzo and probably Addison Russell being hurt by so many moving parts for so few positions? I think it's a significant damage to their long-term development.
I think Schwarber doesn't even fit in. I think Schwarber needed to be traded in the offseason, and that's when his value would have been at the peak. And I just think that he's a guy that cannot hit lefties. I can honestly say that there is no way that I could ever see him hitting a lefty, even with his plate discipline against righties and you know how good he hits against them. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely miserable. He looks lost up there against a left-handed pitcher.
Well, they need to send him down and get him right, and they're not going to do it.
But the thing is, getting him right, I don't really know. I mean this wholeheartedly. I don't know how much better he really is going to get. I think he's a 240 hitter.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't really.
Well, and he's going you and to be a little bad. Extensively about yeah, coming into the season.
Yep. You know, I think that you can link him and let's say Chris Davis together, and you know some seasons they're going to hit
Baltimore. Are you talking about Baltimore?
Yes. Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Some seasons they're going to hit 210. Some seasons they're going to hit 265, and you're going to love it, and maybe 40 home runs. But then they're going to have the year that everyone blamed. Another thing, tangent again. Sorry, the Chris Davis year where he had down year. Everyone said it was because, you know, he wasn't taking his medicine. He failed a damn PED test that year. How was he not taking his medicine that year? Yeah. That makes no sense to me. But anyways, so his down year for Chris Davis is going to be a year that is similar to what's happening right now for, you know, Kyle Schwarber. I just think that those two players are going to be similar, and I just hate owning that player because, again, you never know what you're going to get.
Well, I think on a different team, Schwarber would be a much more interesting guy because they could put him, you know, I mean, he struggles so much defensively. They could put him at DH, they could put him at first base if he was on another team, but with Rizzo there, you're not going to play him at first. He's awful in the outfield. He's absolutely atrocious.
That play he made the other day in the outfield was the most fantastic play I've ever seen. It was point down in against the Brewers, and then the ball, it was kind of routine. He was running in full speed, and he's kind of like a bull in a china shop, running full speed. The ball hit the palm of his glove and bounced forward. And then as he was running in one motion, he was like a shortstop and dove barehanded and picked it up and tried to flip it to second base, and it went into right field. It
didn't make it within 10 feet of its intended target.
Yeah, no. It was really bad.
It went just a bit outside.
But, I mean, that was one of the concerns that Matt and I had coming into the season was he was so bad defensively, even if they were willing to throw him out into the outfield, you knew he was going to get replaced a lot in games. And it just...
Well, the other thing is that when he got injured, that's a play that an outfielder does not get injured on. He got injured because he's... like you said,
he doesn't know how to run routes in the outfield.
Doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what's going on out there. He's just looking at the ball and just running as fast as he can, and that's what he does.
Fowler popped up with no serious injury on that.
Fowler's extremely lucky.
That's the thing that gets me. But I mean, that's the honest truth. In my opinion, if they keep him in the outfield, he's going to hurt himself again at some point.
Yeah, wouldn't
surprise
me.
He's not an outfielder.
No, they need the DH to come to the National League like nobody's business. It's just
yesterday.
I mean, yeah, they needed it. Well, they needed it when they had Dan Vogelbach too. But ultimately, they need to trade Schwarber to an American League team. I just don't see it happening. But to your question about them hurting people's development, I mean, whose development are they really hurting?
Javi Baez is the type of offensive approach that he needs to play every day. I would venture that Ian Happ has been playing every day, but I don't think that continues with Hayward returning. Obviously, he can go back down.
He has been playing since Hayward returned. They're actually
been, what, two
out,
games though, right?
Yeah, but they're sitting on more. I mean, when they played him, they hit
Amora,
him fifth.
Another guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but they hit him fifth, so it's not like they're hitting him seventh or eighth, and they're just getting him in the lineup. They're hitting him in a prominent spot, so I think that's
and it's not
that they're Cubs.
And that the Cubs are losing consistently right now, which is again something where not to poke fun at them, but they need Happ right now. Their offense is struggling, and Happ is crushing the ball. So yeah. I mean, I don't see any way that they get Happ out of
like,
the lineup.
This wasn't a criticism of the Cubs because I don't really think there's anything else they can do. I was just making an observation because there's
there's obviously something you can do. Kyle Schwarber isn't hitting. Send him down. Give Baez a full-time position.
Can't send a Hall of Famer to AAA, Justin.
All right, with that, I'm moving on. Brandon Maurer is the Padres closer, and he has been god-awful as of late. So, Philip, I'm going to ask you first, how long does he keep this job for, and who's his eventual replacement?
So I'm looking at it, and his FIP is around four points lower than his ERA is. So his FIP is 2.69, and his ERA is 6.88. So I think it might be time to actually buy low on him, as crazy as that sounds, because he is striking out, 11.6 guys per nine, and walking less guys this year than he did last year. Home run rate went up slightly, but not anything to be concerned about. I would venture to guess that he has some crazy BABIP right now. Yep, at 400, and when his career is 313. I think he's just been unlucky, and I think it may have been just a couple of games, and this early in the season, it just has inflated his ERA.
All right. Matt, do you agree? Is he a buy-low target right now, or is he going to lose his job at some point?
Yeah, he's kind of a buy-low target, but you have to keep in mind he's on the worst team in baseball, and he's the closer, so that obviously means they have to be winning for him to provide you with the utmost value, which he's only has 5 saves this year, which might be more than you would have thought, or less, who knows, but closers are always a little bit fickle like that anyways. But underlying skills, I'm buying. But I think, again, what are you going to get the rest of the year from him before he gets moved? 10, 12 saves until someone makes him a setup guy for him? So keep that in mind when you're buying. Keeper Dynasty, I would be looking to, I mean, you don't buy in a format like that because Brandon Maurer is not the type of guy that has the skill set to hold down a closer role long term. But I think he rights the ship a little bit. I mean, his XFIP and his XFIP is 226 and his FIP is 268 and his ERA is over 6, almost 7. So, I mean, something's got to give here. The peripherals are way too good for what he's doing. 11.5 strikeouts per nine with just over 2 walks per nine. Those are fantastic numbers. Even the home run ratio it's high for him, but 1.06 isn't a death blow for anybody. It's not responsible completely for the ERA. So he's running into a little bit of homer luck, bad luck, and just bad luck overall. He's a guy, like I said, skill set I'd be buying, but I'm just leery because he's on San Diego, and what are you really buying?
Yeah, the velocity's up. About a mile an hour. Like you guys mentioned, the BABIP is pretty high. The walk rate is actually lower than it's been in the last 4 seasons for him. And he is striking out more guys than he has in his entire major league career, and by quite a bit. So, I mean, I think the underlying stats are totally fine. I would try to go out and buy him right now and see what I could get. I know that he's on a crappy team, and they're not going to win a ton of games, and so you may lose saves, but with how crappy that team is, the games they win, they're only going to win by 3 runs or less.
Yeah, that's also, you can look at it both ways. Yep,
so,
you're right.
I mean, he's not going to be a top-tier closer, but, I mean, both of their setup guys are left-handed, which, you know, usually managers don't want to go to left-handed closers. No. Like you said, he's just getting unlucky. I mean, his strand rate is only 52% right now. I mean, that is you know, a huge problem, and one that should self-correct. With only giving up about 1 homer per 9, he's got an 18% home run to fly ball rate. Those numbers are going to normalize at some point, and he's going to be fine. And so I would try to buy. And the nice thing about the fact that his surface numbers don't look good in terms of his ERA is that it may mean other teams within Major League Baseball aren't willing to buy him right now.
Yeah, other than, like you guys mentioned it too, and another thing I want to touch on, he's a heavy ground ball tilt guy. 45% compared to, I'm talking about through his previous year at 37.8. And he provides you a level of safety, but it's just, if he was on any other team in baseball in the closer spot, which he wouldn't be because he's not that great of a pitcher, but if he was on, say Brandon Maurer was the closer for like the Boston Red Sox, you'd be all over him right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just on the
Padres. He'd also have lost his job by now.
Sure, because there's other guys behind him. No, you're right.
Yeah, but there.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
about
I
that.
Like Brad Hand a lot. I think Brad Hand is a really, really talented reliever and one of those guys, especially deeper formats, that especially like NL only or even 15 team mixed or deeper, that is a nice guy to supplement your pitching rotation. But I don't think that they are going to make him or Buchter the closer at any point. So,
no, like, and for people that don't know, managers are really, really hesitant to make left-handed pitchers closers, and for a couple different reasons. Number one, majority of the hitters you're facing, you're going to be giving up the platoon advantage in the most critical inning of the game, which you don't want to do that. And number two, I think perhaps most importantly, is a lot of teams only carry one, maybe two left-handed relievers in general. So then you're kind of putting yourself in bad spots for matchups in the sixth, seventh inning because you only have one lefty because you want to save the other one for the ninth. So it's kind of hesitant.
They do have three total lefties in that bullpen, though.
Yeah, watch one of them. Jose Torres is one of them, right? Yeah. Like I think he's a guy they don't really trust very much in anything right now, but it's lefties. I'm a fellow lefty myself, so I have a little soft spot for lefties. But we always get to the short straw. I mean, I don't ever get a chance to be a closer, which I don't think is fair. And I also have to write in notebooks with a spiral on my wrist, which is annoying. So being a lefty is tough.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for you at all. Actually,
the struggle is real.
It is. The struggle is very real.
Yeah. No.
I'm just looking at his game logs, and so. You wake up on May 14th, and he had a 2.02 ERA. He's had five games pitched since then. He's given up runs in 4 of the 5 outings.
Welcome to the life of a reliever.
right. So, I mean, he just had a bad stretch. I think it's something where, earlier in the season, he gave up a couple of runs early, and his ERA was up at 6 again. And then he got it down to 2, and then it just a bad couple outings. He went up to 6. I think he'll get it maybe down to 3, 3.25 by the end of the season.
Yep, I'm right there with you guys. Let's move on to Tommy Joseph, who started off the year dreadfully, but has been picking it up as of late. Currently has 6 home runs on the season. So, Philip, is this time to buy Tommy Joseph?
He was a guy I was targeting at the beginning of the year during the draft season. As a late round flyer, and then he started off as slow as he did, and I just dropped him everywhere. And he's been sitting in waivers on a lot of different leagues that I'm in. I'm considering picking him back up, but as we talked about earlier, the first base landscape is just, it's so deep. I just can't find a spot for him on any team at this point. I feel like that if I'm picking anything up, it's probably going to be, an outfielder that is, Ian Happ or Zimmer or something like that at this point. So honestly, I think I'm out on Joseph, especially because who's the Rhys Hoskins? Is that the guy that's coming up shortly? Rhys Hoskins. That's how you pronounce it. But so he should be coming up shortly. He's killing it in AAA right now. Literally, the only reason he's not up is because of the little hot streak that Tommy Joseph has right now. So I think that might be short lived, and I think we might see Rhys Hoskins, and he would be a guy that you would want to pick up.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Tommy Joseph?
Yeah, Tommy Joseph is my favorite guy that looks like he's 45, but is actually not. If you look at his picture, it's
hysterical. I thought I was your favorite guy that looks 45, but isn't.
I shouldn't have said that out loud then, I guess. We have competition, but if you want to laugh, go look at Tommy Joseph's photo on MILB.com. He's only 25, but he looks like your dad. Like, he looks flat out like 30 years older than he actually is. Not an exaggeration. He looks like a coach. But the thing with Tommy Joseph is he's finally getting hot. He's feeling the heat, though, from Rhys Hoskins in AAA, who's absolutely been the best player in the International League this season. He's in the top three in the batting average, RBIs, runs scored, and homers. I think that's good, right, to be all that?
Yeah, it's all right.
So
I would take that, yeah.
Yeah, I would too. But basically, my question with Hoskins, though, is I'm not sure he comes up anytime soon, though. He deserves to call up by numbers.
Why would the Phillies even care about bringing
exactly
him up?
That and he's how much different is he than Tommy Joseph? I do think Hoskins is a better hitter. I do think the power is probably comparable. Probably the slight edge to Hoskins, but how much of an upgrade are you actually making? And kind of under the table, the Phillies aren't really in a position for the upgrade. They kind of want to lose, right?
Yeah.
So, and they don't want to start the clock on a kid that they have. That's a big part of their future. They're both right-handed, so it's kind of like the modern-day Jim Tomei, Ryan Howard thing. Remember when they had that going on? Ryan Howard was hitting 35 home runs a year in AAA he was in AAA for like a year and a half, if I remember correctly, just because Jim Tomei was around, and neither of those guys can play any other spot. And it's kind of ironic that we're about 15 years later, and now they have two right-handed guys, not as good as those two guys, obviously, but two right-handed offensive-only first basemen that can't play anywhere else. Joseph's kind of dabbled at third base, but again, Mikhail Franco's there. He used to catch. And I don't think he can do that anymore.
He had a lot of concussions, yeah.
Yep. And so he's not going to do that anymore. So there's really nowhere to put him. Tommy Joseph is going to get traded in the offseason, or if not sooner, to make room for Hoskins. And he might be a nice get for somebody, but I'm not buying him because I think while this hot streak is short-lived, he doesn't get on base a ton, doesn't run. And I think ultimately his job isn't as secure as it might be on a bad team. So I'm kind of out on Tommy Joseph. I do like the game, but I think there's other parts with more upside and more safety that are out there that I might explore. Like you said, Zimmer.
So, Happ. But you're out for long-term for this season.
I'm out for long-term for this season. I would ride it if I have him. And if I have an open spot, if I lost Freeman, I think you can do worse than find Tommy Joseph on waivers. But I'm sure that waiver period's already passed. But for this season, I would ride Tommy Joseph out until you can, because I don't know if trading him is going to get you much. So yeah, I'm in for this year, but out long term.
What's a realistic expectation for him? Because he's a 250 hitter that has, you know, maybe a little bit above average power, but on that team last year he had 21 home runs and only 47 RBIs, 308 on base percentage. I mean, there's really nothing to like about him other than the power. I mean, he's kind of one category guy. He has one stolen base. I mean, I don't know.
I think with 500 at-bats, he's a 30 home run guy.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he's a guy you make room for those at-bats for, if that makes sense. Because he doesn't offer you anything
else. Since the beginning of the month of May, he's currently hitting 345, 422, 727.
Yeah, he's been right
on. He's got over 10% walk rate. Even for the season, his walk rate is over 8%, which would be a career high for him. I like what I'm seeing from Tommy Joseph. It's a good park to hit in. They are going to continue to run him out there to either, you know, make sure they know what they got in him, or like Matt said, you know, potentially try to move him, you know, for starting pitching or another area of need in the off season. I think he is a real interesting first base guy that, like Philip mentioned, is available in a ton of leagues right now.
Yeah,
I mean, he's hit 5 home runs already in the month of May. I mean, is that going to keep up the rest of the year? No. But I could easily see him hit another 20, 25 home runs rest of the way, put up a decent enough average to, you know, not kill you. And if you're hurting at first base, if you just lost Freddie Freeman in a 12-team league, Tommy Joseph might be out there.
You prefer Joseph over Adams, right?
Yes.
Both you guys? Yes. You prefer Joseph over Yonder Alonso?
No.
Yes.
I would take Yonder Alonso.
I think I would take
Alonso just Better because park. I think he's got more playing time security.
Well, but I don't know if that's
and
true.
I think he's just a smarter hitter. Just the fact that it came out that he's trying to change what he's doing,
there's verifiable
evidence showing it.
A lot of guys do that without announcing it like that, though, too. I mean,
this guy is literally saying, "Hey, I'm doing this," and then there's evidence to back it up.
Sure.
So I just think that that's more bankable than, you know, Tommy Joseph having a good 2-week stretch.
Yeah, I think the problem with a guy like Alonso is he's just hitting too many fly balls, and at some point they stop going out all the time, and then you've got a guy whose average is craters in front of us.
Ryan Schimpf.
And I was just about to say, it's what Ryan Schimpf does. And, you know, there are going to be times in which Alonso is extremely hot and he hits those 12 home runs, and then you're going to have a month somewhere along the way where he is going to hit like 2 home runs that month, and he's going to hit like .130 and like destroy you in the average department. And he plays in one of the worst parks in baseball, on one of the worst teams in baseball. I love what he's been doing, but he's, you could already see over the course of the last like 10 days he started to slow down, and there's going to be, there's going to be some really, really cold stretches. We just haven't talked about that yet because, you know, he's been hot to start off the season.
I think these guys are in the category as like Logan Morrison, and you just churn and burn these guys.
Yeah,
all these guys are hot.
I think Joseph is a tier above that.
You're probably right, slightly for me, but yeah, you're probably right. I'm just worried about Hoskins because Phillies are a weird organization as far as they're kind of stuck in the middle. I know they're brutal this year, but I mean, Hoskins does feature in their plan substantially next year. I would bet on him being the opening day first baseman for them next year.
Sure, but I don't think Hoskins comes up before September.
I'm kind of with you. Maybe a couple weeks. Maybe that's the surprise, like Dansby Swanson call up last year.
Maybe comes up after the All-Star break. It's plausible.
See, that's what I was thinking of. Maybe right after the All-Star break.
But that's still 2 months away.
And what other teams need a first baseman that Tommy Joseph could go to, really? I mean, there's probably not a lot.
Tampa?
So.
I mean,
yeah,
but
Tampa's not competitive, right?
Freddie Freeman freak accidents happen all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Talk about, because I want to get a couple more guys in before we have to wrap up. And we've been bantering so much that we're running a little short on time. So Tyler Anderson has been red hot as of late. He was a guy that people were kind of tagging as maybe a sleeper in mixed leagues this year. He started off the year extremely terribly, but in his last three starts, he hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs in any of the starts. He struck out a total of 25 guys. Is it time to jump on Tyler Anderson, Matt?
Yeah, I think it is. He's on a good team. Winning creates good positive atmosphere in Colorado, and I mean, you look at what Jeff Hoffman did tonight, was outstanding. I think there's something to at least starting all these guys on the road, and Tyler Anderson proved last year at home that he wasn't that he's actually better at home, which was really strange for a Coors Field guy. But he's actually been slightly better at home this year. I know he's been inconsistent this year, but he's a guy I'm not afraid to roster. He doesn't really excel at anything, but if you're in a wins league, which you can't really predict wins, but he's in a good situation in Colorado to do that. Quality start format might be a little bit rough because he's barely going above 6 innings in his last 6 starts. He hasn't topped 6 innings. He's hit 6 innings 3 times. But other than that, he's out after 5. But yeah, I'd roll the dice on Anderson. I think with the injury landscape for arms, you kind of have to, and he's put together a few nice ones lately, and he proved last year that he was a pretty nice arm, so got the first round pedigree to go with it, so I'm on the Tyler Anderson train.
Philip, are you on the Tyler Anderson train?
I am all off the Anderson train. I just can't find myself rostering Rockies pitchers. As good as any of them are, Umbaldo had that one year where he just dominated, and I was okay with not having him, and everybody said, you know, he's going to do great, and then out of nowhere, he just gets shelled. So, you know, I inherited a Dynasty League this year and had John Gray on the league or on the team, and I've been trying to trade him all year. $3 John Gray in a 12-team Dynasty League. And
No one
will take him. No one will take him from me because – I mean, he's injured right now, obviously, so that's one thing. But at the same time, I can't trust any Rockies pitcher because I know the stats behind it. Like, the best season ever for a full season was, like, what was it, Mike Hampton's, like, 12 years ago? It's just, I don't know. They haven't really had that many pitchers with that high pedigree there, but at the same time, I just don't think I'm going to trust, you know, a guy fresh off his rookie season, not doing anything too great, giving up runs. He hasn't had any inning or any outing where he didn't give up a run, and he's only had one outing where he gave up less than two. And so every outing, it's either 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 runs. It's and as you were saying earlier, he's only going 5 innings, so it's not like he's giving you a good start out of it. He's just 5 and dive with 3 runs, and that's not something I want to roster.
Yeah, I think the biggest concerning part for me is the fact that he isn't going deep into ball games, and I think part of that is due to the strength of the Rockies bullpen. I mean, that Rockies bullpen is so deep that they're able to kind of cut guys short in their starts and save them from, you know, having to go through the order a third time. And so if you're in a quality start format, I can't really advocate picking him up, because then you're talking about a guy who, I think his strikeout rate is steadily improving over the course of the season. He could blow up your ratios, you know, depending on where, especially if he's starting at home. And then you're not really getting a chance to get a quality start out of him most of the time. So, but in a wins league, I think you can chase wins with him. I think he's a great streaming option. I've picked him up in a number of leagues and streamed him over the course of his last 3 starts, and has worked out fairly well for me. He's done 2 of these 3 starts, and both 2 that he went 6 innings at home against teams with decent offenses in Arizona and the Dodgers. So, I mean, I think there is something to grasp onto in deeper formats, but I think you have to be careful about when and where you start him. Don't start him at home against a really great offense. But I think he's figured out a way, with his ground ball usage, to kind of minimize some of the effects of the Rockies' home park, and it seems to be working for him. So I think depending on the context of your league, he's worth a look at.
I think one thing that helps Tyler Anderson is he's not breaking ball reliant.
That's true.
And which is good in that ballpark.
Yeah, because the thin rocky air really messes with people's breaking
balls. That's why I was devastated with Jeff Hoffman getting traded there. Well, he was really good tonight on the road, but Jeff Hoffman's bread and butter pitch, if you don't know, is that big hammer curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the worst place for him to be. But that, again, I'm not afraid to roster Hoffman because I think what he can do. Another tangent. Sorry about that. I think what he could do on the road is worth enough having him on your roster, because he's a future top 30 starter in the game in a neutral park. And I love what he can do. I loved him in college when he was at ECU and ripped his elbow, and he was rumored to be number 1 overall pick until that happened. And I couldn't be more on board with Hoffman, and I streamed him today, and I plan on holding him going forward.
Yeah, I used Hoffman in DFS today, and I was
I saw your recommendation on the Roto write-up, too. That was good.
Yeah, I, you know, I mean, well, one, it was a really shitty slate.
It was, but still, Hoffman on the road against anybody is a good matchup.
Yeah,
I think.
I mean, it just, it, but it was, I mean, like, you know, because what I use, for those who read my Roto write-up that I do over at FanGraphs, what, Monday through Thursday, I give streaming pitching options for that day and the next. And I use a barometer of less than 50% own in CBS leagues, because they tend to cater to a little bit deeper leagues than ESPN and Yahoo. And so like 50% owned in ESPN and Yahoo is, you know, most people don't even have those people available if you're playing in deeper.
If you're hardcore to listen to baseball podcasts, they're surely
not. That's what I was just going to say. Yeah. I mean, if you're out seeking knowledge and you're not just like, I got a fantasy baseball league, you probably have that player owned in your league.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I recommended Hoffman and that and used him, because I don't like none of those people who, like, recommends people and then doesn't use them. So I was pleasantly surprised. I hadn't had a chance to actually watch the tape yet, but from kind of box score scouting,
looked real good.
It looks pretty good. All right, we need to wrap this up, but we had an interesting conversation before we started recording about Eduardo Rodriguez. And so I want to get that on tape, because I found it really interesting, and I didn't realize how well he had been pitching until kind of having a discussion about it with you guys. So, Philip, tell me your thoughts on Eduardo Rodriguez.
Now, Eduardo Rodriguez is a guy that, I mean, he's often injured. He's also a guy that, you know, hasn't really been given a strong role, as we were talking about earlier in the starting rotation. But since he's been there this year, it's something where he's just excelled in every facet of the game. I mean, his ERA and his FIP are in line with each other. They're right around 3.1, 3.3. His WHIP is just a tick below 1.1. Strikeout rate's right at 10. Strikeout to walk is a little bit over 3. This is the exact Eduardo Rodriguez you want if you were an Eduardo Rodriguez believer at the beginning of the season.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Rodriguez?
He is doing exactly what he was doing last year after he came up. If you don't remember a little bit with Rodriguez past last year, he came up and in the first six starts, he had an 8.59 ERA. Opponents were hitting 315 and slugging 621 off of him. Yeah, that's not an error, 621. He, much like Jose Berríos, who we talked about last week, or one of the podcasts out here, he was tipping his pitches, went down to the minor leagues, corrected it, came up. He has a 3.10 ERA now. The second half last year in his last 14 starts, hit a 3.2. He's essentially the same guy, batting average against. Last year in that start, 2.10, slugging was only 3.29. Right now, numbers are pretty comparable. Strikeouts have tipped up from the second half. They're marginally up from the second half last year. Home run rate is down. He's doing everything that shows growth in a pitcher. The BABIP's a little bit low, but it's a little bit low compared to what it was last year. Last year, like I said, he had the rough first couple starts, and the BABIP was still only 278. Now it's 263. Ground ball percentage is still, he's still a fly ball heavy guy in Boston, which you got to worry about. Home run per fly ball, still a normal rate. This is the kid, he's doing numbers, he's under the radar. You paid nothing for him pre-draft. He kind of was in a weird situation with Boston, who doesn't develop starting pitchers very well. In a weird situation where he wasn't really guaranteed a rotation spot, had a lot of numerous parts. They traded Buchholz late, and then he was in. And he has been outstanding. And I expect him for growth in dynasty leagues. I'm trying to jump on him everywhere because I don't think it's known. We were talking about this discussion pre-podcast, and it was a conversation that Phil had with Marco Estrada about Marco Estrada and with Paul Spohr, correct?
Yeah.
And you had a discussion with upside with the rest of the season, Marco Estrada and Eduardo Rodriguez. And we kind of talked about this, all three of us, before the show. And I think we kind of swayed everyone into, I think everyone's in the Rodriguez camp now. And
yeah, because I wasn't. I mean, I'll be real honest. I mean, and without looking at the numbers, I was like, nah, I would take Estrada. But you guys did. You guys swayed me. I mean, he's got, his contact percentage has been lessened by about 6.5%. His swinging strike percentage is up. His first strike percentage is right there in line where it was last year. People are swinging through his stuff within the zone and outside of the zone more this year than last year. I mean, his velocity is right online. He's got the highest strikeout rate of his very young career, but even higher than any year in the minors, mm-hmm. which is great. And that, you know, is, you know, I mean, nothing is really, there are no warning signs to say that what he's doing right now isn't legitimate.
I gave him a comp. I don't know if you guys agree with this. Pre-show we were talking about it. I think the upside for Eduardo Rodriguez is he's a left-handed version of Michael Fulmer. What do you guys think?
I think that's a pretty good comp, and I think that's a really good player.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Because the knock on Fulmer, just like the knock on Rodriguez, was a lack of a third pitch. They're both fastball slider guys. But Fulmer, came when he came to the major leagues, his changeup was legit. So whether the scouting reports were behind on him or who knows, but Rodriguez seems to be the same way. Looking at Rodriguez now, he's throwing his changeup supposed to be a marginal pitch for him. He's throwing it 20% of the time. That doesn't sound like a marginal third pitch, right? If you're throwing it that much, mm-hmm. you must have confidence in it, and it must be growing as a pitch. I mean, it's up from 16% last year. He seems to reduce the slider, which now the changeup's now his second pitch, if you look at the metrics, how he's throwing it this year. So the growth, I think, is a real thing, and I'm excited for what the future holds for Mr. Rodriguez.
And
I think back to your point, Matt, is that if you look at, let's say, from August on, at his usage percentages for his pitches, they're pretty much in line this year with what they were last year, except he stopped throwing the sinker as much and started throwing the four seam a little bit more. But everything else is pretty much in line where it was as soon as, you know, he had a slider rate of over 30% in July of last year. And I just don't think that that's something
that must have been the pitch he was telegraphing.
Right.
That must have been the pitch he was telegraphing because hitters were teeing off. He came back up after he got sent down, corrected it, came back up, and he was damn near perfect for what you'd expect out of a 24-year-old, by the way. He was only 23 last year. He's 24 now for the full season. So,
in Boston too. That's tough ballpark.
It's really hard to have an under the radar player in Boston, but I think we might have one.
Yeah, I think we do. You know, because I mean, for me, one of the things that you guys mentioned, I think Philip mentioned first, was this guy's had injury issues, and we've seen it throughout his short stints in the major leagues so far, as he's been injured quite a bit. But right now he's healthy, and as long as he's healthy, I'm happy to roll with him. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Philip, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Definitely. Why don't you remind people again where you can be reached on Twitter, and then give yourself some plugs about the work you guys do over at the Fantasy Front Office podcast.
Okay, so we're at Fan Front Office on for the Fantasy Front Office, obviously, podcast. And then I am at The Baseball Jedi on Twitter. I'm also starting to write a couple of things for Prospect 1500, and I just took over the Cardinals for them. So look for a couple of things to come out for that here soon. Hopefully I get their top 50 rankings updated here within a week or so.
Nice. Matt, what are you working
hopefully
on?
Hopefully you can add Luis Robert. Oh, wait, they dropped the ball on that.
Yikes. Wow.
Yeah. MD Tomp FWFB. Sorry, Justin. I had to get my joke in there for the Cardinals being frugal. MD Tomp FWFB. You can find me on Twitter that way. Always good game to talk ball. And keep sending me your Keeper Dynasty questions. They're great. They're entertaining. I love answering them. You guys play in some weird formats, though. And look for, again, in a couple of weeks, there'll be a June update for the prospect list for the month. A lot of graduations, recent call-ups, Almora, Zimmer, and the surprising Anthony Alford call-up. So that'll be taken into account. And prospect show with Mike and Andy. We'll be back online here this week. And, hit me up. I'm excited for the draft. Any draft questions, hit me up. I will I guess this is an open question, so state your preference, you two, Justin, and whatever you think. Should I do my prospect rankings after the draft, right, for the month of June?
Or I would think, yeah, because, I mean, you don't want to have to reshuffle them after the draft again.
Yeah, no, so that's a valid point. So after the draft and we figure out where these teams are located or where these kids are located at and look for a pre-draft ranking or post-draft top 100 again. And hit me up with the questions.
All right. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read anything I write over at Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week. And over on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, you can also hear me every Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels. And you heard Matt. We had Matt on our first episode. We'll probably have him on for some draft coverage coming up pretty soon after the draft concludes. So
love to.
Definitely check me out and Matt out over there every once in a while. Feel free to give us a review. And if you give us one of a 5-star variety, that'll get you entered in to win some pretty cool swag, courtesy of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. We've got mugs, we've got shirts, and other cool stuff we'll be giving away all season long. Probably give away the next shirt next week, so definitely tune in to see if you win that. And all you got to do is give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and that will get you entered in. If you don't have iTunes, steal somebody's phone. That's what I would do. That will wrap us up for this episode. For Matt, Philip, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.